welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Most folks dread the thought of a nursing home or assisted living facility. Many envision scenarios, you know, that are not unlike that of Nurse Cratchit in the Ken Kesey novel, One Flew of the Cuckoo's Nest. And in some cases, that's not much of an exaggeration. But things are changing, and they must, according to our first guest today. Beth Baker is an award-winning journalist for her reporting on aging. She is a freelance journalist and regular contributor to the Washington Post Health Section and the AARP Bulletin. In her book, Old Age in a New Age, Beth reviews the history of nursing homes, why they evolved as they did, and what's being done to change the trajectory of old age in the United States. Welcome to the show, Beth.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Joining us a little bit later, Michelle Awashah. She's a certified senior advisor and elder care advisor. So if you have questions for Michelle coming up at the bottom of the hour, give us a call at 614-292-8513 or go to allsides@wosu.org and email those in or go to All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page. Do it there. Michelle can answer your questions, probably. Beth, why have we become so afraid, or are we having learned not to be afraid? But in any event, why have we become so afraid of growing old, and especially in nursing homes?
It's really a broad cultural problem, our fear of aging. And it's something that I'm very hopeful is going to change in the coming generation. One reason, though, is because of the institution of nursing homes and how they've evolved. We tend to see old age in medical terms. We tend to see it as a time of loss. And the movement that I write about in my book is saying, wait a minute, we keep growing and contributing until we take our last breath. And let's change how we live in old age to recognize that.
I was interested in the history and how old age homes, nursing homes, evolved from not exactly debtor's prison, but the poorhouse.
I know. Isn't that fascinating?
It really is. It didn't come out of some kind of a philanthropic mission to help older people. It really did come from a place of warehousing.
Right. I mean, people really early on were thrown in with petty criminals or alcoholics or anyone whose society decided couldn't fend for themselves and were somehow flawed got all bunched together.
That, and with children, with people who are mentally ill, it was all one big unhappy family.
Right. And if you had means, then you could pay for someone to take care of you in your home. So it really was, poverty was also a part of that mix.
And so it became easier. So our culture, I'm wondering what came first, you know, the chicken or the egg here, the poverty, the relationship we have with people who have to be in those kind of places because they can't afford to have it at home, or and then that started to make us look askance, maybe look away from them because we don't want to watch.
Well, that's certainly a big part of it. And one thing that I really feel we all suffer from is denial. And I include elders when I say we all suffer from denial, so that even people who go in the nicest sort of retirement communities now, often on the tour, won't even go visit the nursing home or assisted living place on campus, even though they're paying a lot of money to move there because of this denial and fear.
What's the alternative to being afraid? Maybe if we're afraid, we make sure that we're not going to end up someplace yucky, or if we open our minds up to it and don't fear it anymore, what's the difference?
Well, I think we do need to open our minds up to it, and part of the way we do that is to spend more time around people who are very old and listen to their stories, find out what they want to be doing with their time. Last night I was with my 92-year-old mother-in-law who informed us in one evening she learned how to make tortillas from her Mexican housekeeper. She decided, my mother-in-law, she wants to help teach English to this woman's sister, and she decided she's going to try to get a computer and try to do email. Now, a lot of people would say, 92, forget it. You've lived your life. Just sit around and reminisce and let us move on. But people can still do a lot of growing, no matter what our age.
When did the the concept of nursing homes start to change a lot in this country? But before I say it, our concept of nursing homes in the United States, it's not the shared around the world, is it?
No, and I really see it as I don't really explain this so much in my book, but I think it has to do with industrialization. Because as long as we're agricultural societies, we take care of our own in the family. But as soon as the world starts to industrialize and women leave the home into the workforce, then that safety net, that family safety net is gone. And really, World War II is when a lot of the nursing homes started. And after that, when women were still in the factories often, that's when nursing homes took off.
Because they couldn't stay home and take care of their parents anymore.
Right. And I've talked to people from India and other places who say these nursing homes are just starting in their countries for this exact same reason.
What's the big change? What's the big culture change that's been occurring over the last 20 years?
The big culture change has to do with changing how we view aging, like we've been touching upon. Mm-hmm. And if we change how we view aging, how does that affect our long-term care settings? So one thing people realize pretty quickly is that loneliness is one of the real burdens that many older people feel. So in this culture change, nursing homes tell aides, for example, we don't want your job to be so many baths or so many meals. We want your job to make each elder's life as rich and meaningful as possible. And when you shift the thinking of people who work there, not only do the elders have better lives, but the workers themselves find work much more fun. I've had so many aides say, it's fun to come to work now. I used to hate to come to work, mm-hmm. and now it's fun. And often that doesn't cost money.
There's an organization, it's called the Eden.
The Eden Alternative.
The Alternative, yes. And it uses, and I saw some questionnaires. There's an elder questionnaire. There's a family questionnaire, which makes a lot of sense. It doesn't seem that unusual. But there's also an employee questionnaire in the matrix when they're surveying how the operation is working.
There is no way you can have a good quality of life and a good quality of care for people if you don't have a good quality of working life. And so much of that depends on relationships and mutual respect. So they put a big emphasis on that.
Where did this change come from? What inspired it? Where did it, what's the kernel of it?
Well, what I find interesting about this movement is I think of movements as being more grassroots from the bottom up. Mm-hmm. But this is different. This was really started by enlightened people who work in nursing homes, often as administrators, who had an epiphany of some sort, a personal epiphany, where they looked around them and they said, we are doing something terribly wrong. We have got to change. And as people began creating places that looked more like home, physically look like home, as well as the day-to-day rhythm of life felt more like home, then others could see, oh, it could be done. Why don't we reimagine everything we're doing so that it doesn't look and feel like a hospital? Who wants to spend the rest of their life in a hospital?
Mm-hmm. There was a fellow that you wrote about, I want to say Oklahoma.
Kansas, maybe? Steve Shields?
Yes. Steve Shields, and he had a $2.5 million renovation going on at the nursing home where he led, and yet he felt this pit in his stomach, like no matter how much money they spent, something was horribly, horribly wrong.
Yes, and he really did a very courageous thing, which was go to his board and say, all that money we spent on architectural drawings and breaking ground, we have to stop right now. And he's a very charismatic, persuasive person, and they listened to him to their benefit. I mean, he has one of the most wonderful communities in the United States. People come from all over the world to Meadowlark Hills in Manhattan, Kansas, to see what they have going there. It's a great place.
He learned about that from a little place up in Minnesota somewhere.
Yes, a little public place, meaning, you know, it was really for low-income people. And I visited there. They have made very much a household feel in the old nursing home wing. So not only do you see dogs and cats and there's on the cover of my book, there's a lady with a cockatiel on her lap.
kind of pushing the envelope there.
From back home. But they also do things like one woman used to be a cook in lumberjacks. And so they sometimes, if she feels like it, she goes in the kitchen there in the household in the nursing home and whips up some, I forget, muffins or pancakes or something that were her specialty. And everybody, the workers and the people who live there, enjoy this special breakfast. So they try to create these moments of, well, I love this word that they use in the movement, which is normalcy.
Mm-hmm.
Creating normalcy in our lives instead of this institutional character.
614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org if you'd like to speak with Beth Baker, author of Old Age in a New Age, The Promise of Transformative Nursing Homes. Madeline, you're on the air. You work in a nursing home.
I do, and I wanted to call in right away and mention that there is a ton of living going on in these facilities. Now, I do work in health information, so I'm not in direct care, but when I first came to this world, I was also really surprised how much living is going on. I agree wholeheartedly that nursing homes, the whole paradigm has changed. There are pets that visit. There's an aviary here. We have a daycare right next door, and the little munchkins decorate their bikes and wear little hats every holiday, and they come through the hallways, and it's a hoot. And I'm also, you know, of the 50s generation, don't have kids. There's a good chance I'll land in one of these places sometimes. Actually, there's a good chance many of us middle-agers will land here mm-hmm. for a short time, if nothing else, to rehab. And you know, I just want to encourage folks who are perhaps looking for work, think about working in a skilled or long-term nursing facility. It is so rewarding to work with oldsters. And with that, I will listen offline. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Madeline. We're going to have to take a quick break. My guest is Beth Baker, author of Old Age in a New Age. And coming up, Michelle Awasha, she is a certified senior advisor in Central Ohio, and she can answer your questions and tell us how she does her job these days. 614-292-8513 to give us a call or email us at allsides@wosu.org or go to All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page. Put your comment or question there. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
You're listening to WOSU 820 NPR News. It's a steamy 87 degrees outside at 11:19 this morning. Sunshine today and a high in the mid to upper 90s. Clear skies tonight and a low around 70. Sunshine and a high in the mid 90s for tomorrow as well. WOSU Public Media presents a special Chefs in the City coffee tasting at Luck Brothers Coffee House in Grandview, Thursday, July 29th at 10:30 a.m. Join us to sample gourmet coffees and treats and get a rare coffee take-home from Luck Brothers. And you'll be a part of a special TV production and learn how to brew the perfect cup of coffee. A limited number of tickets go on sale this Thursday morning. For more information and to reserve your tickets, go to wosu.org/chefs.
Support for WOSU comes from The Other Paper, Columbus's news and entertainment weekly, on newsstands every Thursday and online at theotherpaper.com.
All Sides with Ann Fisher continues. This is WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Joining us, Beth Baker, journalist and author. Beth, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
And also with us now is Michelle Awasha. She is a certified senior advisor, elder care advisor. Let's see. She has been doing this for 5 years, and her volunteer work has been with the Alzheimer's Association. She's also had two families with Alzheimer's and dementia. has assisted over 6,000 families in finding resources and solutions for their aging parents. Michelle, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Anne.
Tell me, how do you get into the business you're in?
You know, it really came from a drive to do something rewarding. I've had family members that I've experienced this with as well. And there are so many wonderful resources out there for people. Many just don't know how to access those resources.
So was it something you went to school to do, or was it something that you fell into, or did you see a need for it?
I think that it was more driven by the reward factor of being able to assist people and a little bit of falling into it as well. But it's where my heart and passion is. I think, as evidenced by the person that called into you, when you understand this industry – I'm sorry, I shouldn't use the word industry, by the way. But when you understand long-term care and long-term care options and resources that are out there, and how much just a little bit of the information that you can provide, or the little hug that you can give a resident as an aid, how much it absolutely can change their life.
Beth Baker, is Michelle's job, are people like Michelle relatively new to the scene?
Well, I'm glad that Michelle's on, because I think, I don't know if you're a geriatric care manager, if that's your title, but people like Michelle that I know who are social workers and occasionally are at registered nurses play a great role for families, not only in letting people know the best places in their communities, but really acting as advocates for the elders. So it's a growing profession.
Michelle, how do folks – you work for a company. Why don't you tell us who you work for and how folks do get hooked up with you?
Sure. I work for a company called A Place for Mom. We're a national elder care resource and referral service for family members. We do have online at aplaceformom.com. And you can also filter from there and find us locally. We have, as I'd mentioned, 400 advisors. So we have advisors in most every area. The difference for A Place for Mom and what I do as an elder care advisor is that we tour these communities very regularly, nursing facilities, assisted livings, independent livings. I'm sure Beth will attest that they change so frequently. That's part of, I think, the challenge to having any of these discussions, is that one minute a community, any community or any, and even home care, is only as good as its staff. Its management in many cases filters through to the staff, but is only as good as its current staff. And we keep a very close pulse check on that, and working with family members and continuing to follow up with family members, we have a very good feel for not only the community itself, but also the levels of care that it can provide. And the differences, the changes, things that are going to be very important to people as they're exploring their options.
You know what bothers a lot of people is that the industry is so, I don't want to say monopolized because I'm not sure that's really the right term, but by corporations, for-profit corporations. And Beth, that wasn't by accident. There was a time when the government wasn't allowed to have, there was something with the funding, wasn't it, that dictated it had to be outside of the government.
Well, I don't think I think there was a. I'm sorry, but I'm my memory's failing that piece of it. Mm-hmm. It is a fact, though, that the vast majority are for profit. When I say, I mean nursing homes and assisted living mm-hmm. are for profit. There are not for profits as well that are usually faith based,
right.
And there are a few public ones left, but not very many.
And folks are afraid of that. Should they be, Michelle?
I think that it can be very regional, to answer your question. I think here in Columbus, I do not find that. I will tell you this is an arguable topic.
Mm-hmm.
And there are people that feel very strongly on both sides of this. But from what the communities are currently how they're currently providing care and the feedback from family members, I can't say in our area here that it is at all an accurate statement to say that it's a nonprofit just because of the mere fact that it is a nonprofit provides better care.
Oh, no, and I didn't mean to say that. Mm-hmm. I was just giving the numbers. But I do think in this culture change movement that I write about, it has mostly come from the nonprofit side. And the problem might not even be so much that it's for profit. It's that increasingly the small mom and pops are disappearing, and they're huge corporate conglomerates. So the people making decisions are not any, you know, they're hundreds of miles from the communities whose lives, you know, their decisions affect.
614-292-8513. Have a question about elder care? Give us a call or email us at allsides@wosu.org. My guest, Beth Baker, author of Old Age in a New Age, The Promise of Transformative Nursing Homes, and also Michelle Abishah. She's a certified senior advisor and elder care advisor. So, Michelle, do people get a hold of you from going online and looking for you? Because I'm not sure I would know to look for someone like you.
Right. And I think that is the advantage of where I work, A Place for Mom. I think the company started from this great desire to find information and not access it. So we are very heavily internet-based, if you will. If you type in any information regarding seniors or senior care, it will pull up. So I think that's been a great advantage for people. But you can also contact me locally as well.
And do people refer you?
Yes. I work with a lot of families from different agencies, from the Area Agency on Aging here in Columbus to the Alzheimer's Association, physician practices, attorneys, a variety of sources will send families to me.
Who pays you?
A Place for Mom, being national and being so heavily internet-based, and all of our funding is on the marketing side so that families can be drawn in and have access to information. So all of the communities, every level of care, nursing facilities, assisted livings, independent living, home care, all fund into A Place for Mom to make it accessible.
So if somebody needs you, they don't necessarily have to be able to pay you.
Oh, no. This is A Place for Mom is a completely free service for family members.
Mm-hmm. 614-292-8513. I know you've got questions out there because I always have questions. And I'm wondering, Beth, how did you even begin to analyze these places and figure out what the questions that you needed to ask in the first place were?
Well, I kind of stumbled into the story because I was writing an article for the Washington Post on the natural world and how science was looking at the link between being around living things and our health and well-being. And from that, I heard about the Eden Alternative, which is a movement to change nursing homes. And one piece of it is to fill them up with pets and children and plants and make them very lively places. And once I heard about that, I was so intrigued by how it was challenging my own assumptions of nursing homes. So I really went to the leaders of this movement. There's something called the Pioneer Network that links the Eden Alternative and many other efforts around the country to create this change. And they steered me to places that they thought were really cutting edge, and they were gracious enough to open their doors to me. I often spent the night in these homes all around the country and just tried to immerse myself, full immersion, into these nursing homes to get a taste of life there.
And what was your impression? I mean, how has your impression changed over time?
Well, my impression has become increasingly hopeful. I started out feeling very negative about nursing homes because of my own grandmother's experience, and now I feel like there are so many options out there already, and we're only at the very beginning of this change. Something like 10% of nursing homes have probably really transformed in a systemic way like we're talking about, and it's really catching on so that it's now becoming the normal language and understanding of what's desirable. Not that all nursing homes have been able to implement it, but I think, and now they're carrying this whole idea of person-centered care to home health agencies, to assisted living. They're looking across the spectrum. How can we change the experience of aging for people in our country? And it's really quite exciting.
What's the opposite of person-centered care?
Oh, you could say institutional-centered.
Mm-hmm.
I guess would be the thing that comes to mind.
There was an interesting comment by someone in your book that they didn't realize when they went into a nursing home that they would only be treating their physical side, and that they didn't that all that they do is cater to their physical side. It's the food. It's the the sheets. It's the this and the that. And it was a nice place. It was clean and people were not cruel. I mean, it wasn't one of those kind of places where they were abusive, but they didn't
Yeah, you
connect.
Mean that's all for the rest of my life?
Exactly. Yeah, she said, this is what I'm going to be doing for the rest of my life. Right.
And unfortunately, that's still true in many places, even the so-called nice places. And that's why I would want to caution families, don't judge a nursing home or an assisted living place by its cover, by its physical. Obviously, you want a clean place no matter what, mm-hmm. but you really need to focus on the relationships and the rhythm of life. What are people doing with their time? Do they have any reason to wake up in the morning and smile and say, oh, good, I have another day?
614-292-8513. And Jerome, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm curious where, at the risk of sounding like a snob, people who've led an active intellectual life fit in, you know, scholars, writers, and, you know, people of very high intelligence oftentimes have, you know, difficulty relating to people who aren't of an equal intelligence. Because they're just operating at different levels.
Because they're just all put into the same place. They all live together now. They are not just independent anymore.
Right. And to be honest, the idea of watching a bunch of kids from, you know, the daycare center next door, you know, troop through my hallway isn't particularly appealing to me. So I'm wondering where the difficulties of integrating people who've led, you know, different lifestyles and different intellectual activities work into it. How do you keep them intellectually engaged if you've spent a lifetime, you know, writing or teaching or something like that? So.
Well, there's. I have a couple responses to that. One is, I wish you could go up to Oberlin, not far from Columbus, and go to Kendall at Oberlin, which is a Quaker retirement community that was founded by alum of Oberlin for this very reason. They looked at their own retirement and was like, "What? We want a community where we're going to be going over to the campus whenever we want to take part in activities." They have an extremely rich life there. So that's one piece. But obviously not everybody can live at Kendall at Oberlin. And there is quite a bit of mixing. But it's up to these communities, the people who live there, and the families to create enough offerings that everyone does feel stimulated and invigorated, and it's certainly possible.
Well, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
You're right. I mean, Kendall at Oberlin is expensive.
It's very expensive. It's very expensive, and that's why I am excited about some of these other models as well, like the one we talked about in Minnesota, the one I went to in Mississippi, the first so-called greenhouse, which is a small household. The people there are very low income, and they have one of the best places in America to live simply by trying to create real life in a household. It's amazing what can happen. People go to yard sales when they want. They pick what they want for dinner, and the aides work with them. They help out if they wish. It doesn't have to be just for the wealthy. That's the other good news.
Part of it, Michelle, is about the individual, too. I mean, someone has to be willing to get involved and willing to become part of this new community.
Oh, absolutely. Are you referencing the resident, Anne?
The resident, exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. And that comes the whole – there's a whole nother component to when you're talking about looking for care options, and that has to do with the individual themselves and them being participants of. And I think that is a lot of the challenge is people have, as you mentioned in the beginning, a fear of what is out there, so they don't want to look at all at the expense of their own health. In many cases, will not go to look, will not go to explore. And it's absolutely very accurate. You have to engage as well.
614-292-8513 or email us, as Susan did, at allsides@wosu.org. She writes, please address the fact that in the corporate structured nursing home, those who work most closely with patients are paid the least. Is that the case, Beth?
Yes, and it's not just in the corporate ones. It's in many other nursing homes, and that's one of the challenges that our whole society has. We have not invested enough in long-term care, even though it's terribly expensive for the individual. And that's why I say it's a societal problem. We really need to figure out a way to pay people better wages. But it's, as I really want to stress, it's not only the wages. People have to be treated with respect, and their creativity has to be allowed to flourish.
Because some people just like doing that job. They're not in it for the money in the first place.
Most people who go to that job have a calling for it, I believe. I mean, you can go, I mean, they always say, well, you could go work at McDonald's, you know, rather than do that for the wages. But people really want to help elders, and whether they can really thrive, they, the workers, in that setting, depends on the culture of the nursing home or whether they feel beaten down and throw up their hands and leave.
Beth, what are we looking at in terms of numbers of people that will be of nursing home or whatever we typically think of as nursing home age? How are we aging?
Well, there's currently, as far as people in nursing homes, there's about 1.5 million, and that number is supposed to go up by, I've heard, 25-40% in the next 20 years. We keep hearing the tsunami of aging. I think we're going to be, 84 million? I think that's right.
I don't want to think about it. I'm at the end of it. I hope they've worked out all the kinks by the time.
I really think our generation is doing some great work at building communities like co-housing. I mean, we haven't even had a chance to talk about all the options that people are creating in hopes that they won't have to go to nursing homes. But I do think the whole piece of living in community, wherever that means, is we need more focus on that and less on the medical and safety issues. Not that they're not important, but as we said, that can't be the whole story of your life.
I like the idea of the group homes that you mentioned.
Yes, and that's really increasing with this. I don't know if you're familiar with co-housing, but that's the idea of people building a community, each with their own apartment, and then some common areas where they can share meals and be a support system for one another.
And then they pitch in to have somebody come in a couple times a week or whatever.
Right. Now, whether they can, the question mark for me is, once people start to get dementia or have real serious problems, will these new models, you know, how will they work? But the greenhouse that I mentioned in Tupelo was many, many of the people there had dementia, and you would never know it when you walk in there. It has a very serene, sweet atmosphere with everyone looking out for each other.
We have to take another break. In the meantime, if you have a question or comment, 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Just have one more segment left with Beth Baker, author of Old Age and a New Age, and also Michelle Awisha. She is a certified senior advisor in Central Ohio. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
This is Terry Gross, and I have about 15 seconds to explain why you should listen to Fresh Air. You should listen because, unlike this little promo, on Fresh Air we have time. Time to spend with incredibly interesting people in the arts, entertainment, and politics. Enough time that we get to know them. Join us for the next Fresh Air.
And Fresh Air will be here in 20 minutes. It starts at noon on today's edition of Fresh Air. Comic Louis C.K. talks about his new FX series, Louis, in which he plays a comic who is now a divorced father of two, like the real Louis C.K. It's a sequel to his first series, Lucky Louis, in which he played a married man, which he was at the time. That's on Fresh Air at noon, right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. When you don't have time to catch the whole story, get the update with the WOSU Daily News Loop. Receive award-winning local coverage and NPR headlines emailed every weekday right to your inbox. Catch up on current events or listen to a story you missed. Don't miss a beat with the WOSU Daily News Loop. To sign up, go to wosu.org/email. Currently 88 degrees in downtown Columbus at 11:40 this morning. Sunshine and a hot day today with a high in the mid-90s. Clear skies tonight and a low around 70 degrees. Mostly sunny for tomorrow and warmer with a high right around 96. And then some clouds move in tomorrow night, and there is a chance of rain coming for Friday, and a little cooler for Friday as well. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm talking with Beth Baker. She's the author of Old Age in a New Age, The Promise of Transformative Nursing Homes, and also Michelle Awasha. She is a certified senior advisor, elder care advisor in Central Ohio. Beth, you use the word transformative in your subtitle, not changing nursing homes. What's the difference between change and transformative to you?
Well, to me, transformative indicated a deeper systemic change. So we're not talking about just bringing in a kitty cat, or, you know, we're not just talking about having more clubs that people can be part of. We're talking about changing the whole web of daily life for both the people who live there and the people who work there.
614-292-8513. Jerry, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much. As an octogenarian, I can say I listen intently with it. As somebody said, it's not the golden age, it's the rust age. by the way, I wanted to mention that the U.S. Public Health Service, contrary to what most people believe, the average adult male today that reaches the age of 40, it's adult male, lives how much longer than his counterpart in 1870, 140 years ago? 6.5 years longer. My brother didn't believe me when I said this. I said, Bob, go over to the Evergreen Cemetery and look at the four children of our great-grandfather that all died before they were 4 years old. And of different, mm-hmm. That's the reason we have a longer lifespan, is because the infant mortality rate has
mm-hmm.
become.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's true.
Most people don't understand that, and insurance companies are
well, Medicare, too.
Right.
So you can make it to 65, you're good to go.
Yeah. Well, I have a former associate and close friend of 50 years that 6 months ago had a stroke. I went down to see him in Riverside, and he's been in a nursing home since. His entire left side is paralyzed. But this was a man who turned 84 in March, I think. We've been friends and associates for 50 years, and his entire left side is paralyzed. And I think there is a book that I haven't read, Stroke Diaries. I don't know if either of you have heard of it.
No.
You might want to get this. It's a doctor that specializes in strokes. And he says that if you can catch it when the person has a stroke, within an hour and a half of the stroke, there's a certain procedure. And not being a doctor, I don't remember it. Lots of things I don't remember at my age. But anyway, join the club. Huh? But the worst thing that older people fear is ending up in a nursing home, which my mother did the last 21 months of her life and passed away at 94. But, the trouble with this country is that there is too much administrative costs in all these, not only insurance companies, but in these nursing homes. But they pay the, and you brought attention to that, and I appreciate that. And I don't want to take any more of your time, but your guest, Ms. Fisher, may want to address this part, because when they're in strokes, nursing home because of a stroke, it is difficult not only for the patient, but for the spouse. And I have been in communication with my friend and also with his spouse, and it's not a, he was so healthy until he had that.
Yeah.
And he walked a lot, used to walk 45 minutes every morning, but I think last winter he didn't because, we had a lot of ice and snow.
Right.
But I've taken enough of your time, and I appreciate it very much. Have
Thanks,
a nice
Jerry.
Day.
Thanks, Jerry. You too.
Thank you.
What about folks who are, Beth and Michelle, who are in a situation like that where they're they're incapacitated.
Well, it speaks to the need to have environments that are not sterile, because really people have the opposite idea. They think, oh, my uncle has dementia. He doesn't know what's going on anyway. It doesn't matter where he is. But in fact, the richer the environment, and by that I mean the more things there are to look at around you, the more time a dog, you know, is by your side or a mm-hmm. cat is on your bed, the more stimulation that you have, the better, and it helps people's well-being no matter what their condition.
614-292-8513. I'm going to take some of these calls, but first, from Spencer on Facebook, writes, earlier you made a reference, this is to me, to One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. I did. I was just wondering if there are facilities where abuse like that still occurs. And Beth, did you find places out there that were neglectful at least? And
Oh, yes, sadly. Now, they are the minority, mm-hmm. But there's an organization here in Washington that has used to be called NICNR, but they just changed their name. But it's an advocacy organization for nursing home residents, and they have focused for years on the real bottom of the barrel places, which I might add is mostly all Medicaid people who are very poor. So again, we get back to the poverty thing that we've mm-hmm. talked about at the beginning. But there is still hideous neglect at a small minority of nursing homes in our country, yes.
Michelle, when you find a place like that, what do? Do you report them or?
Yes. Each area has a long-term care ombudsman, and that's a great, absolutely a great place to make that report.
And where is that ombudsman, where is that person located?
Here in Columbus, it's Catholic Social Services. It'll be different. It'll be administered differently in each area.
Okay. 614-292-8513. And Paul, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Ann, Beth, Michelle. I think my question is, I wanted to echo just one thing Jerry said. Administrative costs are, huge in all of healthcare. Certainly in long-term care, extraordinary. In any event, that's not the nature of my inquiry. I think this is for Michelle.
Mm-hmm.
What is the governing or certifying body that makes one a certified elder care
advisor?
Advisor, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
That's sort of question one. And dovetailed to that is, okay, if families do not pay for your services, somebody does. And what is the nature of the financial relationship of the organization that you work for to the institutions that you may refer to? Mm-hmm. Are you following me?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Very valid question. We get asked a lot. To answer your first part, it is a designation from the Society of Certified Senior Advisors. That is what that is. Your second question, A Place for Mom. We are funded. We're very open about this. We are funded nationally by all these communities. We are they are very happy to find a way to get their information out to families about them as communities. One thing I will have families call me crying that they went down a Yellow Page listing and none of them were appropriate, or they went through because they advertise in each other's categories.
Yeah.
Because people don't understand the difference between an assisted living and a nursing facility and how they're funded. It's very complicated. Group homes, and it changes state by state and sometimes county by county in some instances. But so we allow them an opportunity for families to be able to access not only their information, but us as advisors, because I can spend as much time as needed with you, never any charge for you, to help you understand the difference between a long-term care licensed skilled nursing facility versus a residential care facility, which is assisted living. So for me to take that time and educate you is certainly worth their investment in us as an organization. And we are obviously a strong marketing arm for them.
Okay, and not to be testy, but
thanks for the warning, Paul.
but it's a fair question.
Yeah.
Because financial incentives drive a whole lot of things in our capitalist system.
Sure.
You know, what is your obligation, if any, to refer to system or facility A versus B, C, or D,
right,
as it relates to financial. And I'll take your answer off the air, but thank you very much.
Thank you, Paul. So how do you decide, you know, you have a client in front of you, they're telling you their life story, and, you know, how do you figure out where's the best place for them to go or what you might suggest for them?
Well, I'm glad you bring this up, Anne, because I definitely wanted to address today that when you are considering for yourself or for a loved one what kind of care you may need, I think it's very important to understand that it's so unique and personal to you. And so what is right for your neighbor or for a coworker may not be right for your family. Each one of these communities may have different specialties. They each may have different funding sources that may or may not be appropriate for your particular situation. So the very heart, the skeleton, if you will, of the information I'm trying to assess is clinically what type of care is needed, geographically, where you are located or siblings are located.
Where you'd like to live.
Exactly. And financially, where you are, what's affordable to you. That's the skeleton, if you will. But I think Beth would agree with me on this, that is just the core. I mean, there are so many other things that come into play with regard to a whole nother level with Alzheimer's and dementia of that component. What is important to you from a religious standpoint, from what will be enriching for you as an individual, and each community may have different areas of that they specialize in, perhaps gardening or woodworking, or we could go on and on with this, but it's such a unique and personal situation for each family.
There's quite a green movement too, isn't there, Beth?
Yes, although it's a little confusing. The greenhouse, which is the small household model, isn't like a botanical garden. I mean, they think of it as being Eden, as being a rich place to live, but it's not really directly plant related. Yeah.
Right. We have some more questions. Let's see. 614-292-8513. If you want to join the show, Mike, you're on the air. You are a senior caregiver. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I am. I spent 35 years in the finance business, and when I retired from that, I started about 3 days later as a senior caregiver. I got hooked taking care of my dad, who died of Alzheimer's, and my mother, who died of COPD. My wife and I both took care of both of them. And I found that if people can stay at home, it is really a remarkable thing. I have three clients now. One is mid-stage Alzheimer's. The other one is a COPD.
What's a COPD?
Well,
I'm sorry.
That's the breathing problem. In this case, it's emphysema.
Okay.
And the third one is just, you know, in excellent mental shape, but happens to be very old. And all of them really enjoy staying home. And we're able to put together, I think, a reasonable program for all of these people. Nothing against nursing homes. I think they do a great job with the assets that they have. And it's very difficult for nursing home operators under tough state and federal regulations to make a profit and keep going with having enough people to care for those that are there. I think if people can stay at home and not have to give up all their assets, they have a much better chance of a long-term survival. And I've seen it happen in my own family. By the way, just as an aside, there's a beautiful Kendall located in Granville, which was founded by a bunch of Denison professors. So might want to have a closer one.
That's right.
But I'd like to hear your, and I'll take it off the air, I'd like to hear the comments of your folks on how they feel about home care.
Home care. Thank you, Mike.
This is Beth. I think that, 99% of people would say that is their dream, what you just said. And I think if you can get a team of people to support you in staying home, that is a wonderful option for people. That said, there are many people who are at home who are isolated, lonely, bored, not eating right, not in touch with their neighbors, for whom a community setting, a congregate living, or however you want to call it, might actually be preferable, but they just don't realize it. They think their choices are, do you want to stay home or would you like to go to prison? I mean, that's really, I think, how people think of it. And I'm trying to say there's a spectrum of options out there, and I totally agree with Michelle. It's such an individual choice, and I really recommend people work with a geriatric care manager or someone like Michelle to learn about some of these options.
May I add to that
as well?
Sure,
Michelle.
And I think it's really important. I I facilitate some support groups, and I think it's very, very important. Of course, it is everyone's dream to stay at home, but I think it's very important that we understand that is just in some cases not a possibility, either as a result of Alzheimer's or dementia. It could be funding. It could be the sandwich generation. I'm sure another topic, but it's just not possible. And I think that there is some stigma, so much guilt and emotion surrounding people that do have to explore the option of long-term care, whether it be nursing home or assisted living. And I think we all as a society need to help them embrace that and not feel so much guilt and angst around that.
Mm-hmm. Tom, welcome to the show. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
You know, wrapped into aging issues and alternatives, you know, Alzheimer's keeps coming up, and I just wanted to volunteer. There's a doctor in Columbus named Dr. Leopold Lees.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry?
Oh, I didn't mean to interrupt. I've met him. Yes, I know who you're talking about.
Well, he's just got wonderful experience over 40 years in the field of Alzheimer's care, and he's created a CD, DVD, disc set that offers advice and tips to people, caregivers that are dealing with Alzheimer's. And there are so many mistakes that we make almost out of human nature just because, you know, somebody didn't say, by the way, that might not be a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
At any rate, if anybody's interested in that, I learned a great deal from it.
They What's the doctor's name again, Tom?
Leopold Lees, L-I-S-S.
Okay, we'll check that out and try to post something.
He pronounces it Liz, but the site they can go to is theartofcaring.net.
Okay.
And if I could just tell you a key thing I learned from that.
We're running out of time, so make it quick.
Okay. you know, one of the problems is being in a particular reality, a different time for Alzheimer's patients, and people kind of forget that maybe sometimes give up. If they liked chocolate ice cream when they were 10 and they were 40, they like it when they're 80. If they liked a certain color, you know, it transcends those kind of things. And it goes back to the enriched environment and ways that you can make people happier. And thanks for listening to me.
Thank you, Tom, for calling. We appreciate your time. You know, Beth, we only have a minute left, but I did want you to talk a little bit about how you think the baby boomer generation is going to bring about this change, kind of bring it all back.
Well, if we can overcome our denial and if we can embrace the fact that, yes, we're getting old, yes, there's wisdom that comes with that, and the relationships we have in our lives are the most important things. If we focus on that and unleash our creativity, there are so many exciting options and solutions going on out there, but it will only happen if we stop being in denial about getting old and plan for it.
Beth Baker, author of Old Age and a New Age, The Promise of Transformative Nursing Homes. Thanks so much for joining the show today.
Thanks for having us.
And also Michelle Awasha. She is a certified senior advisor, elder care advisor for My Mother's Place. Thanks for joining us, Michelle.
A place for mom.
Mom. A place for mom. Sorry. She's nodding, but it's called A Place for Mom. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820. This is listener supported, WOSU and WOSU HD 820, Columbus, and streaming on the web at WOSU.org, WOSU 820, NPR News.